Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. This is our first podcast of 2024. I suppose we could have, talked about a couple things, but really, that's because nothing's happened, and it's because spring training starts this week. Ryan, we have some things to catch up on. Not much, though, and you can blame AJ Preller if, like me, you were scared by the photo that producer John Kelly chose of the Friar, because what else was John going to pick as a picture? Maybe Mike Schilt, huh? Is that where you would like to start?
That is horrifying. I think, oh my goodness. Yeah, we should start with Mike Schilt. Just a little background and a hello to our listeners and viewers again. I've been asked many times here the last couple months when we were going to do a podcast again. And I said, hey, man, we're just waiting for a big move. And so we're still waiting. I think that the biggest move in terms of addition that the Padres have made this offseason is probably hiring Mike Schilt. He was hired November 22nd. Kevin, you wrote an absolutely mesmerizing story about him that ran a couple of weeks ago in our paper. To our readers and listeners or listeners and viewers, find that story if you haven't read it already. Give yourself a half hour, 40 minutes to read it because it is long. It's fantastic. Kevin, you've gotten to know him and his people here in the last couple of months. What are the Padres getting in Mike Schilt?
First and foremost, and I think that if Mike were answering this question, this is what he would say: an organizational man. And why is that important? Because I believe that Mike Schilt is the best suited man to work with AJ Preller as a manager to a general manager in Preller's, what, by the way, this will be Preller's 10th full season as general manager of the Padres. And here is a guy, Mike Schilt, who was with one organization, the St. Louis Cardinals, who for decades prided themselves on being like the organization above all else. And that's what Mike Schilt was brought up in, ascended to manager, by the way, never had a losing season in three plus seasons with the Cardinals. And Mike is all about other people. He's about relationship, and he is about that. Even if you don't agree, even if you have big problems with the direction, that you find a way to work within the system and you find a way to lead other men, making them believe in what the organization is doing. And that's all I'm saying. Right, wrong, Preller fan, not a Preller fan. You, if you've been paying attention, if you've been following along for years, and especially the drama last year with Bob Melvin, you know that's a dream come true for AJ Preller.
Is he an old school guy or a new school guy? Because he'll say one thing and I go, oh my goodness, this could be 1988. Talking about, running the bases well and not giving away outs. And then he'll use another phrase, he'll use the phrase equally yoked. And I go, wow, that's sort of a little new agey.
It's actually biblical.
Sounding.
Yes.
Biblical. Yes. Yeah. Right. A little religious sounding. To me, he seems like a mix. Kevin, what are your early impressions from that?
Sure. Standpoint? A mix, which, right? Like every guy's going to tell you that now, right? But you're correct. I mean, you made like the things that he talks about. Now, of course, bolstering that belief, right, is like the new rules with the base running, pitch clock, and the fact that Mike Schilt had a front row seat to watch the Padres lose a whole bunch of games where if they just moved a runner over once in a while, or, they would have been in the playoffs. And so Mike Schilt can say to his guys, hey, look, listen, guys. Remember last year, all right, just one run here. This could be the difference. So, but yeah, among the things, what I call the Cardinals' guerrilla warfare on Mike Schilt, because no one ever talked on the record about what it was that caused a three-time playoff manager to be fired suddenly, was that, hey, maybe he wasn't entirely on board with kind of a shift that the Cardinals were trying to make.
Right.
In my conversations with Mike, as adamant as he is about, it really hasn't changed much since he coached high school baseball, play together, play good defense, pitch well, don't make mistakes, don't beat yourself, execute, be disciplined. He is definitely into the new school. He understands the analytics and how they complement the old school way of thinking.
Sure. Kevin, in your story about Mike Shildt, one of the most interesting points you made, I think, was from the time he was a boy, like my kid's age, he was around a baseball stadium doing different things every day. He told you what kind of cleats Cal Ripken wore. He, you know, he worked the clubhouse. He worked the scoreboard, or the scoreboard. He was in the press box. He ran hot dogs to the umpires after game. This is a guy who knows every single facet of baseball and has since he was a boy. Kevin, I'm not asking you to compare him to Bob Melvin, but it seems to me as if very few men in baseball have that sort of background where they've, you know, they've literally shined the shoes in the clubhouse and now they're a big league manager.
You know, I've talked about this often. I've talked to Mike about it. I marveled when I learned about how important the Orioles, and see, when you talk about it being around a ballpark, it was Double A Charlotte O's that he, his mom worked for. She was the right-hand man to the owner. And so Mike was around a lot. And the Orioles, by the way, were the winningest franchise in Major League Baseball for 25 years, which encompassed the time that Mike was with them. And he always talked about the Orioles way as much as he talked about the Cardinals way. And I, for a couple of years, was like, what the heck, man? What are you were like a shoeshine boy. And I get that was a big deal, but like, you were with the Cardinals for 18 years and ascended to be manager. Well, think back to your formative years. Think back to if when you were 10 years old, you were learning at the feet of Cal Ripken and Cal Ripken Sr. and Jimmy Williams, you know, and a whole bunch of other guys that you know were old baseball men. That would stick with you forever. And so that's big to Mike. And I mean, I like, honestly, not because I wrote it. I can't recommend it more in terms of trying to understand a man, the story I wrote. And I say that only because I think, you know, it was thanks in part to you, Ryan, and you, what you allowed and how you supported it. It was lengthy. So there's a lot of stuff that was in there. And look, now going forward, pitchers and catchers report Sunday and they do their first workout Sunday. There, of course, it's going to be brief. They want to get out and watch the Super Bowl as well. But now it's about what Mike Shildt does with the Padres. And that is how, you know, he will be judged going forward, how AJ Preller will be judged going forward. But in terms of understanding him, I mean, I'm glad we had this, you know, chance to talk about it, because he's a very interesting man, and he is very grateful. And I'll tell you one story, and I don't want to get into the comparisons either. And I didn't write this in the story, and this is what I like to use the podcast for, in case some of you are just listening for the first time, is there's little things that maybe, you know, as much as you and I love the printed word, right, Ryan, like sometimes things don't come across well, right, or they no matter what you do, people can read into it, and it, whatever you do, and you know how important context is to me, people just kind of, it lacks the context. So I didn't want to do this because I'm not going to get into making this about Bob Melvin versus Mike Shildt or what Bob Melvin did wrong or anything. But we all know AJ Preller, right? Like, work all the time. Talk, 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 talk. You know, if you're married, you know what it would be like to work with AJ Preller. Just wants to talk everything to death. Here's a contrast. Bob Melvin was hired and, they had their press conference back there, what was it, October 31st, 2021. And when it was all done, they're all hanging out at the ballpark. AJ and his staff start meetings. And there's two or three meetings. And later that day, Bob Melvin says to a few people, like, wow, you guys have a lot of meetings around here. It just wasn't Bob's way of doing things. It just wasn't the A's way of doing things where Bob had been for that long. Mm-hmm. Mike Shildt gets hired. He's practically in a plane right away to go and visit all these players. He goes home for a day, comes back to San Diego like three or four times to participate in meetings. This is who he is. There's this. I tell the story only to talk about, not so much about Bob, but how AJ Preller is just like, yeah, this is my guy. Because that's how AJ Preller does things.
It's so interesting to me. Also, we're talking about Shildt's background. I'm not going to talk about your story without letting this awesome fact get pointed out. Something like, what, eight men ever who have not played professional baseball have managed in the big leagues? Take
not
away
a lick of professional baseball.
Not a lick of professional baseball.
And it's only like 100 and something, not even close to 200, like more closer to 100 that have played only in the minors. So it's a small amount of the whatever thousand men who have managed, right?
Right, right. Of the thousand men who have managed, let's just say eight have not played professional baseball. That eight becomes six when you take Ted Turner, who managed one game for the Braves when he bought the Braves out, when you take some guy from the, 1910s who had bought his team and decided that he could do a better job. So then we're down to like six, right? Of those six, the only guy who has not been basically objectively bad has been Mike Schilt. Mike Schilt has he's the only one in the group with a winning record, correct?
Right.
And he's the and his winning percentage is significantly higher.
It's
and he's
like managed 559 maybe over three and a half seasons, took the Cardinals to the playoffs three times. And just among all managers who've ever managed whatever it is, I think he's at like 450 games. But I think I went down to say 300 or 350 games. And it's like the sixth or seventh or eighth best winning percentage all time among managers who've managed that many games. Since, I shouldn't say all time, I'm sorry. I went back to men who started in the 50s.
Okay.
Because you go back into the 10s and the 20s, or as little parity as there was in the 50s, there was less in the 10s and 20s. So
it's incredible. Kevin, can Mike Schilt pitch? That's my next question.
There we go. We're going to shift into baseball, and it is one of the things you can't help but like. Okay, so Mike Schilt got a lot of the same team, and we haven't talked about Juan Soto being shipped off and what the Padres got back, speaking of pitchers. But the big thing is, I don't know what manager is going to win unless they add some pitching or, and this is kind of the thing that they'll hold on to right now, the myriad guys that they got step up. Okay. Doesn't every team say that though? So I do think they're going to add a pitcher, be that Michael Lorenzen, Noah Syndergaard. It'll be someone that they can get for cheap. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because they believe, here's what you have. You, Darvish, Joe Musgrove. Hard to argue if they're healthy, right? That's a real good starting point. Michael King, who they got as part of the, you could argue with the centerpiece, at least immediately speaking, of the return for Juan Soto. Look, everyone thinks very highly of Michael King. I think he made 9 starts last year. He's made 19 in his career. He threw 104 innings last year. They got Randy Vasquez and Johnny Brito, two guys that Randy Vasquez made his debut against the Padres last May at Yankee Stadium. Johnny Brito began the season in the rotation last year. I think it was Nestor Cortez? There was injury. And so Brito, and he, I think, made 13 starts. These are fine swingmen. They have been. They also might be fine starters, but we don't know that. Mm-hmm. Huge. It's Darvish, Musgrove, or Musgrove, Darvish, whatever. Musgrove, Darvish, King, question mark, question mark, question mark. And this is from a team that Ryan, as disappointed as last year was, they were contenders. Mm-hmm. They went to the playoffs in 22. They were contenders last year. And it was largely on the strength of a starting rotation that provided an abundance of innings. There is a way, and I got a story coming out on Sunday that talks about how rare it is. There is a path to being a successful team without a rotation that gives you 850, 875 innings. Mm-hmm. It's rare.
The Padres tried to do it, Kevin, in 21, didn't they?
Essentially, they thought they were covered there, but you are correct. They ended up having to try. That's a great point and a way to bring up what they've done this year. And that is, that 21, I fell for it, so I can't blame the Padres. I remember writing a story detailing exactly why it looked that their rotation was set. And then injury after injury after injury befell them. So it is interesting. They're going into this year basically like, but what they've done is bolster the bullpen big time. And that includes a number of swing guys. I already mentioned Brito and Vasquez, though you're now looking at them to sort of fill out the rotation. But Pedro Avila, Jay Groom, Adrian Morahone, possibly, though coming off injury, I don't know that he's more than an inning guy. Glenn Otto, Luis Patino is back, Matt Waldron. So it'll be fascinating. In addition to whoever it is that I am convinced they're going to bring in, who steps up in spring and how do they negotiate all these innings? Because remember, you use Pedro Avila. Let's say Pedro Avila is just as effective this year as like a piggyback guy as he was last year. He can only pitch twice a week.
Right.
I mean, so then you limited your bullpen, right? And so it comes in who has options, and are you playing that game? And then what happens when you've got injuries to your bullpen? But I mean, look, they have done a fantastic job, in my opinion. I think opinion of a lot of people. I base my opinions largely on what smarter baseball people than me say. They've done a real good job in adding to their bullpen, but the bullpen is the shakiest place to kind of stake your confidence. I think every baseball man will acknowledge that like you want to feel good about your bullpen, but you can only feel so good about your bullpen. There's just so many variables.
Well, and we can go through the list in Padres history of lights out relievers who just kind of, for one reason or another, lose it. Right. Yep. Tim Hill was pretty awesome till he started getting hurt and he kind of lost it. I think of somebody like a Clay Meredith, and now I'm dating myself. Sidearming right-hander was unhittable for 2 years and then was just a guy. Joe Thatcher, right? I mean, there are guys who – this is why you don't give multi-year contracts to relievers, except the Padres do now. and let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, to me, Kevin, and this is just my sort of view from the stands, the Padres – we're struggling so much to get quality starters. They decided to sort of fill their basket with relievers, hoping they could shorten games, hoping that now you're asking maybe Pedro Avila, if he's a part of the rotation, to pitch five innings instead of six or whatever that is. They go to the Asian market and they get two players who, you know, could be closer types, could be setup types. You know, they sign a Yankees free agent, right? I mean, they've really tried now to shorten the game almost the way, was it the Yankees a couple of years ago who did that? Where basically if you could get through six,
oh my gosh,
it was lights out.
Yep. It was, I think it was 19 in particular. They did it for a couple of years, but 19 right. was stupendous. I believe that was it.
Right. Right. Where they had like Betances and Chapman and somebody else, right? The former Orioles closer.
They had Britton.
Zach Britton.
Yeah, there was also someone, I can picture his face, but not his name. But anyway, yes, that it was like, it was done.
Right, right. And so, I mean, maybe is that, Kevin, sort of how they're hoping to cover those innings now?
Yep.
Because all of a sudden you take the guys who might have been bullpen types and Adrian Morejon, and maybe those guys become either long guys or rotation candidates as the season goes on. I mean, it seems like everybody sort of moves over a chair now that they have the back end of their bullpen essentially locked in. I mean, we're talking four guys, Kevin, who could, I mean, if you add Robert Suarez, we're talking
Robert
four
Suarez,
guys.
Wandy Peralta, Matsui. Go. Mm-hmm. It was more like probably a seventh inning guy. You've got Wilson, seventh inning guy. De Los Santos, who they traded Barlow for. So you basically swapped like a seventh inning guy. So you have a bunch of seventh inning guys. Cosgrove moves back to a sixth inning guy, which is also probably where Go goes. That's going to be a lot of fun to talk about Go this year. Alec Jacob, not medically cleared yet, but there's a fifth, sixth inning guy. Right. They picked up the kid in the Rule 5. Don't know, Kolick. There's a fifth inning guy. So I'm working back to where – Okay. More options. And this whole pitching staff, forget the outfielders. They're going to find those guys. They've got a really good core, I believe. It's the pitching that makes me go back. And I don't know how you feel, but back and forth day to day almost they're going to be fine. Oh, wow. This could be a disaster. Oh, they're going to be fine because this could blow up.
Right. Well, to me, it comes down to the two guys who we think are automatics, and that's Darvish and Musgrove. These are two guys who are coming off of scary sounding injuries towards the end of last year. Guys who, I mean, by all accounts, look like they're going to be good to go, et cetera, but A, we don't know everything. B, they're not getting any younger. None of us are. And, you know, we're penciling those two guys in at 1 and 2, but God forbid something happened to 1 or 2. And then all of a sudden you're looking at, let's say it's Joe Musgrove and a bunch of dudes. And, you know, what do you do there? What do you do there? I mean, do you trade for Shane Bieber?
Is Jake Arrieta still available?
Where is Vince Velasquez? Or go down the list. What's his name?
Craig Stammen. He's going to be on the coaching staff. He can start 3 times in a week again.
Exactly. He could start a playoff game. He could start a must-win playoff game again. That's the thing. I mean, that's the thing that makes me nervous. It's not necessarily all these other guys because, hey, it's competition. It's not like it's garbage that they're throwing out there. These are talented guys. It's what happens to your one or your two. And if you're a playoff team or think you are in a short series, you know, are you comfortable, you know, thinking that Darvish, Musgrove, and somebody else can get it done?
You are correct. This is nothing new. This is a higher level version of what the Padres did for years, which is if this guy does this, and if this guy does this, and if this guy does this, you know, we could possibly contend. Now, this is a higher level. This is a much better team than most of those years. It just is. But it still is relying far more. Now, last year didn't work out, so I guess maybe you could take that as a positive. But it's still relying far more than here in recent years on the ifs and the have-tos. This is what's unique about the Padres situation going in with, I'll include Michael King and say, going in with three starters and a bunch of question marks. What's unique about it is that this is a contending team. Mm-hmm. This is a team that expects to contend, and that, you know, despite what was it, FanGraphs yesterday, which I didn't even feel compelled to really talk about it. Love FanGraphs, but they had the Padres at like 95% last year. They've got them at 35% this year. I think what FanGraphs does is awesome, but playoff projections.
They're
fun to talk about, but I think as a Padre fan, you're just coming off last year. You don't want to hear anything about playoff projections.
Well, and who are they penciling in as the Padres starting left fielder in their projections?
It's raining again, Ryan Finley.
It's ridiculous. Kevin, you can't get to Peoria, Arizona. You can't get to Peoria soon enough, can you? Say what you will about Peoria, Kevin, but it's always dry, mostly.
I think it's actually moving that way, as I saw, but it'll be fine. But I heard something. I looked outside at the pool. It's raining again. It will not stop.
Look at you. Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's brutal. A couple things. Hey, real quick, because we are running out of time a little bit. How's Manny's health? What position is Manny playing on opening day, or is he on the team at all on opening?
Well, I think he's playing third base on opening day because he's Manny Machado and he kind of runs the place in some ways, as many veterans do, right? Like, it's a team. Once you get to a certain status, how you're used is a team effort, and you get a little more say. And Manny loves to play. And also, Manny appears healthy. Now, I would say 10 to 12 days, you know, into the camp is when we have a better idea, right? How much has he played third? They might ease him into third. The guy's played kind of a long time, doesn't need a lot of work there. Right. Put him there on, you know, one of the exhibitions in Korea and let him start that next day. I'm joking, but like, whatever. We know he can play third. It's about maintaining Manny's health for opening day and then, more importantly, for beyond. So if he's not at third base, beginning of the season, whatever. My understanding is almost no doubt that he's in the lineup opening day.
There was a time in my pre-sports editor life, Kevin, when I watched the Padres for fun and not for work. When I really became enamored with Jose Azokar. When Jose Azokar did some things, you know, game-winning hit here and there, would score a run in extra innings here and there. I thought then that he was a really nice piece. Is he a starter?
Let me tell you something. If you met him, you'd love him even more. Okay, just a lover of baseball, a lover of life, committed to the game and to everything, including like moving to the United States in the off season. Now there's a girl involved, but you know, to better his English. And I mean,
and not just the United States, right? Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, not Miami or San Diego. Michigan.
Yeah, the Venezuelan didn't just go to Miami. No big deal. Great point. I shouldn't just So anyway, look. He's got a shot, and that's kind of the team that you're going to be looking at, right? Like it's hard. I'm trying to figure out how to say this. I don't want to turn everything negative when you're talking about the payroll and these good players that they've got. So I apologize for hemming and hawing there, but with what they've done at the top end of their roster, and some could argue overpaid or paid too early or whatever on some people, Jose Azokars are going to be everywhere. So yeah, Jose Azokar has a real shot. I haven't got a good endorsement from baseball people inside the Padres organization about it. Like that they're willing to commit to Jose Azokar, they are to Brito and Vasquez as being viable options for the rotation. They're not like, oh yeah, Jose Azokar, that could really be our starting center fielder. They'll acknowledge it could be, but they talk about competition. They talk about bringing in somebody else, you know. So, but Jose Azokar, I'm with you. I might not have, look, we all get our guys, right? And those Ocar is yours. I love it. And you're not saying that he's, you know, Manny Machado or Ha-Sung Kim, but he's your guy that you love. And I like him a lot. I think he's going to play a lot more this year. If he stays healthy, if he continues, it's been an upward trajectory for me. Look, there's a ceiling for him, but it's been an upward trajectory and he's going to play more.
Right. Can he be Diet Grisham? I mean, can he be, you know, right-handed, cover some ground, hit 235 Grisham at 1/8 the price?
He can put the ball in play.
Right.
Whereas so, with Grisham, it was kind of a toss up there. And remember how many times I say on this podcast, I was a Grisham guy.
Right.
But let's be honest, like it just was a hole that just had to be taken care of. I wish him well in New York. So he can put the ball in play. He cannot. There has not been any indication. He can't play center field like him. But you know what? Fernando Tatis Jr. at this point, and not for another year, couldn't play center field like Trent Grisham did. Fernando might make some more spectacular plays, but what Trent Grisham did, he was a vacuum and made you think what he was doing was easy. And that's an art.
Yes, it absolutely is. Who is playing left field on opening day, Kevin? we're getting right into the tough questions today.
Peter Marcano? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know who's playing.
Xander Bogaerts?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I don't believe so. That's not the place. Tommy Pham, you know, I think his price and is going to be a little high for the Padres. They've been talking to him, but, you know, hey. Talk to a lot of people, but I think maybe him more than others. But that's Tommy's in that place where it's kind of a wait and see thing. He has been basically his whole career. And he could come here. He would like to, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there aren't many starting jobs available on playoff contending teams. You would think that of the remaining free agents, and again, money's a big obstacle, but you would think of the remaining free agents, this is better than playing left field for the A's. This is better than playing left field for, I mean, the Miami Marlins, isn't it? I mean, this is an opportunity to
maybe not Miami, but I'm
okay. Right. Yeah, you know what I'm. How about the Anaheim Angels? How about that? Or
there you go,
Angeles Angels. Yeah, you know, to me, that's you would think that if all things were equal, that an opportunity to play for the Padres might be good because again, they consider themselves contenders. Kevin, you go to Peoria here momentarily. It's going to be a little bit of a shorter spring for you. Good, bad. What do we make of this?
Shorter spring for everybody. Obviously, I really do appreciate your concern, Ryan. But obviously, more important than me, the players. I have only ever been jet lagged once in my life, and that was coming back from Asia. This is a man who travels a fair amount, and so the Padres will play on Thursday, which would be Thursday morning San Diego time, the 21st. They are fortunate enough, unlike me, to then hop on a charter and fly directly home, getting there Thursday night. Saturday is Peter Seidler's celebration of life, just announced, story up with some pictures of the patch that has been unveiled. Sunday, Fan Fest. Players will be expected to be at both. Not mandatory to be at Saturday's event, but players will be expected to be there and staff and all that. Monday and Tuesday, play the Mariners. Wednesday, day off, voluntary workout. Thursday, opening day. Woo, that is a whirlwind after a trip across the world and a short spring. The big thing will be getting probably, presumably, Musgrove and Darvish ready to pitch on the 20th and the 21st. And how you do all that, then you get your 5 days off, probably get Musgrove and Darvish again, depending on how, you know, things are going for them. And it shouldn't be that big a deal, but it's just a lot. It's just a lot at the start of the season. And, you know, there hasn't been a normal spring training for a while. Padres had Mexico City last year, took something out of them. You know, who knows? Hey, like how golfers or even ball players go out with the flu and have like the round of their life, right? Maybe the Padres just push through and there's no excuses and they start off the season really hot because like of the challenge and it was them against the world. And I'm pretty sure that's how Mike Schilt is going to frame it. He's that kind of guy. But I'm just saying, I think this is going to be quite a challenge for the Padres. For the Dodgers too, but they have some advantages.
Right. Yeah. Some. And if there's one thing the Padres can't afford to do, if we learned this last year, you can't afford to stumble coming out of the gate.
I just don't think
so. You got to play better in April and May. You just do.
They were the only baseball adage they proved, because honestly, I don't know if you played that season another 999 times, the Padres wouldn't make the playoffs based on, you know, those close games, the extra inning games, those sorts of things. Just all the markers that were on their team that suggested every team that's done that before them has been successful. That was just remarkable and rare. The one adage they proved is you can't win the division in April and May, but you can lose it.
But you can lose it. Yeah. Kevin, I usually put you on the spot before we leave, and today is no different.
It's a tradition unlike any other.
In a couple minutes or less, tell the folks about your first ever visit to the Dominican Republic.
You know, it was fantastic. It was fantastic to see, but I was there earlier. I guess it gets really crazy when they start the tournament, the lead up to their postseason. But what I will tell you is that even though there was smaller crowds that I saw in San Pedro de Macorís and Punta, no, I was not Punta Cana. There was the other city that I went to. You could tell I'm ready for the season. I've forgotten the off season already. The loudest 2,000 people I've ever heard. So it was just a vibe. Music still going on when the pitcher is playing. People playing the drums. Not like one guy up in Oakland or in Cleveland, but like a band. The players, just incredibly passionate. It was a lot of fun. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. It is also a third world country. I think that's something we forget. I don't know if you've ever been to the Bahamas or Jamaica, and you know, you go to the airport. And by the way, the airport in the Dominican Republic in Punta Cana is beautiful, just like down there. And then you take the shuttle bus to the resort, and you don't see the poverty. Mm-hmm. Well, I did, and I mean, it's wild down there, and you could see it was enlightening and neat to see like the personification of what the players talk about and why baseball is so important to them. That was a lot of fun. I would have loved to have spent a little more time and get to know some more people. I look forward to my next trip. It was a lot of fun. Kudos to Fernando Tatis Jr. The way he was brought up, man, you just play baseball. And he went and he played for what? A month. There, a little over 20 games. Kudos to the Padres for allowing it. It's not just players maybe that pass on it. Teams don't want their players to play there anymore for understandable reasons. Could not get over the beauty, but could not get over the poverty. And I will tell you this, I was going to drive, hired a guy to drive instead because I was counseled. It's insane down there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. Thousands of motorcycles. And wow. I was like, Toddy, what were you doing? I mean, I was questioning why you would ride a motorcycle. But what are you doing on a motorcycle in this country? Like, no, very few helmets, 3, 4, 5 people piled on a motorcycle.
Wow.
Driving in between cars so that when you got to an intersection, all the motorcycles were up front, like 50 of them at some intersections, while the cars had to wait. You left, right. It was crazy. The best money the Union Tribune has ever spent was me getting a driver to drive around the Dominican Republic.
My guilty pleasure this offseason was watching the Estrellas on one of the streaming services, and I loved it. It got me in the mood for baseball, and what I loved, and Tatis, it was great to watch Tatis do Tatis things, but you know, some of the other guys who kind of came through that team throughout the course of the year, I mean, Robbie Cano, right? Puig? I mean... They had some dudes, and Eggy Rosario was a member of the Estrellas.
Jurickson Profar.
Jurickson Profar, remember. He's another guy, by the way. Hey,
Jurickson Profar just loves baseball. Now, of course, he's trying to showcase himself, but he just loves baseball.
Wow, that's fantastic. Kevin, one of these years will give you a real offseason. Unfortunately, I'm sorry this year wasn't it, but I'm excited. No,
it's mostly AJ Preller, right? Mostly his fault, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kevin, drive safely to Peoria. And next time we talk, you will be someplace warmer and drier, I hope.
If I could, folks, and I meant to do this at the start, speaking of the offseason, and yes, it didn't feel like much of one, but it was at least one because of the work of Jeff Sanders. And if you want to get yourself ready for spring training, Jeff's annual countdown of or ranking of the 40 man roster is fantastic. Find that on our at theuniontribune.com/Padres, I think. It's our Padres page. Do what I do. Google Padres Union Tribune. And then now, even though it's incomplete because they still have some additions to make, he does a countdown, sort of position group by position group leading up to spring training. So catch those. And then on Sunday, I will have my preview of kind of the pitching staff, which I have found very interesting, gone down many statistical rabbit holes to talk about what the Padres are up against. But as Ryan said, thank you.
Awesome. All right. And again, you can always subscribe to the Union Tribune, go to our website, Kevin Acey's Padres Daily Newsletter.
Ryan, if you break it down with like these deals that we have,
yeah,
it's like 1/3 of a cent per Padres story.
Yeah.
Forget the weather, the seals. I don't mean the team, though we do write about that. You know, the pandas, the koalas, you know, all the other stuff, the corruption, and everything else that we cover. If you just want Padres coverage, it's like less than a penny a story.
Yep, yep. And I will say this. Before I was the sports editor, I was a digital subscriber. It was the best. And I think back then I probably didn't get a good enough deal. Back then I was paying, you know, $10 a month. And at 10 times the price, it was a
problem. Oh my gosh, you were like getting gouged.
Right. But again, Kevin Acey's Padres Daily Newsletter will start running once we get going here at the end of March. That is free 99, as my kids say, to anybody who wants to subscribe. And that's fantastic too. So that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.